This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
This is Joy 94.9's Family Matters podcast, your light-hearted look at parenthood and rainbow families, sponsored by Berry Street. Did you know that Berry Street seeks members of our LGBTI communities to become foster carers? Not only do they have a proud tradition of training and embracing LGBTIQ carers, they officially support marriage equality. Learn more now at berrystreet.org.au, a proud Joy sponsor for over 5 years.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Nichols Family Lawyers. Family law advice for the LGBTI community you can trust. We have expertise in all areas of law relating to rainbow families, including surrogacy, sperm and egg donation agreements, adoption, co-parenting arrangements, and arrangements for children after separation. Mention Joy and receive a free 30-minute consultation. Find out more and get in touch at nicholslaw.com.au. Nichols Family Lawyers are a proud Joy sponsor.
You gotta see the baby. When are you gonna see the baby?
Family Matters.
Welcome to Family Matters. You're here with David, Michelle, and me. Apparently, I'm the lovely producer, Gina. How are you guys?
I'm doing well.
Hey. How are you guys?
That was a bit of a fun time, wasn't it?
They're going.
Yeah, just, I know.
Why not? So, Dave, do you want to feel better? You want to take two?
Yes.
All right, take two, Dave.
There you go.
Welcome to Family Matters. It's Joy 94.9. I'm David. I'm joined here by Mama Mish and our very lovely producer, Gina. What's in our show tonight, Gina?
We're going to be talking some things that I'm going to blush tonight. I'm going to have to probably say the word sperm. Fallopian tube.
Vagina.
Vagina. That sort of stuff. But, even Clayton has, the lovely Clayton from Stand Up Straight has even put in big letters one of the words that I can't actually say, which is intrauterine,
alphabetical, whatever it is. Yes.
Something about insemination.
I've got a whole list of questions here for Anne. I've been doing a lot of Googling about myths and how to conceive. I'm not sure if they're right or wrong.
I'm looking forward to comparing our lists. There's a bit of washing going on as well.
There is some sperm washing.
But how is everyone's week then?
Oh, actually a really busy week.
Yeah.
It's been a lovely busy week.
Yeah.
Because I've been at work enrolling some gorgeous little students that are about to get started. But, it's been a busy week.
I have an interesting story for you on that. We'll get back to that. You just made me think of something. So, Dave, if people want to go and follow us and get more information on us, what do they do?
Oh, what a good question. Well, you can follow us on Twitter on Family Matters 94, or you can follow us on Facebook / Family Matters on Joy. You can also catch up on all our lovely podcasts for the last 6 months on iTunes. You can follow us on iTunes or joy.org.au. And if you've got a question for our lovely guest, who is our lovely guest, Gina?
Dr. Anne Polinis, who's here to talk us through the ABCs of IUI and IVF tonight.
So do you have any questions there? You can SMS us on 0427-JOY-949. Or you can email us on air at joy.org.au, and you can even phone Mushin on the desk on 1300-JOY-949.
All right, well, do you want to hear my story now, or should I tell you later?
Oh, let's hint at it, I reckon.
Hint at it? We did. So I got to tell you, because you do stuff at school, and I do stuff at school.
Yeah.
I got to tell you about this when you come back. So I'll leave you to it, Dave.
Family Matters on Joy 94.9. Family Matters on Joy 94.9. If you want to join the conversation, you can feel free to grab your phone, move your fingers around, and you can text in on 0427-JOY-949, or you can email us on air at joy.org.au.
That's right. If you've got any questions tonight about IUI or IVF, not IUD, because that's the opposite of what we're trying to do tonight. Yeah. I think an IUD is when you are stopping yourself from getting pregnant. Yeah. So tonight we are talking to women who are wanting to conceive, cisgendered women who are wanting to conceive. So if you have any questions, text away.
And we've got a bit of a full house tonight, Gina.
We have a super full house because we've also got a young work experience kid. So when I kind of told him what the topic was, hi, Matt, Nick. He's kind of blushing. And the first thing I said was, Matt, have you ever heard of what sperm washing is? And he's like, oh, my God, what am I in for? But he just reminds me of the gorgeous young face faces I've seen across the university today
remember,
getting
Matt,
free stuff.
Remember, what you'd see behind the curtain here, you do as we say, not as we
yes.
do.
Yes. But yeah, I've got gorgeous students enrolling at the moment at the university, but I think most of them are on campus today because we're giving out free stuff for orientation, and I kind of got some
it
free stuff
so
too.
It's so busy.
So busy. It's so much fun.
Yeah, while I was at, so this is where my story was coming in as well. So there's all the different stalls set up because I was doing some diversity stuff and some training and things at the university. I do things at regularly. And as I'm walking around a lot of different stands, checking them all out, going, oh, wow, there's a pride stand. There's this and that.
There's beer stands. Yeah.
Yeah. And as I walk by, the girl hands me a swag with a bag, says, for your next period to be fresh. And I'm going, oh, I'll take the compliment. and so, yeah, I was like, and then the girl who was with me, she started laughing too. And I go, luckily, I don't need these. She said, but you got a daughter? I go, please, we don't talk about that.
Well, you can bring it in for me. I mean, I know I got, you know, the sushi guy thought I was a boy the other day. And
you
I was like, thank you. Thank you for the compliment.
Goes, here you go, sir.
Here you go, sir. But,
as we're standing next to each other and I'm like, you know, Gigantor next to you.
Well, I didn't. I was quite amused, actually. Yeah.
You took it as a compliment?
I did take it as a compliment. I'd make a cute little boy. But no, we're not talking about that stuff. We are talking about boy stuff.
We're talking about boy stuff?
Yeah, well.
What kind of boy stuff, Gina?
Okay, so I had to research this topic because I actually didn't really know the difference between the IUI process and the IVF process we're going to be asking about with Dr. Anne. And one of the things that comes up on the internet really quickly is a thing called sperm washing. And a whole bunch of also old wives' tales come up about how to get yourself pregnant or how to conceive when you're doing IVF and
sperm
IUI.
Washing. Mm.
But sperm washing, I don't think it is that kind of gentle cycle.
How many of our listeners are right now just Googling sperm washing?
Maybe, is it like the same bag you put your delicates in for like my bra?
What sort of wash do you do your laundry on, Dave?
I think just a gentle wash.
You're
generally,
a gentle wash?
Yeah, gentle
hot
wash.
Water, cold?
No, just cold, yeah.
One of those
Omo.
Earthy. Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Brand.
I like products that save the earth personally.
Yeah.
But one of the funniest things we all kind of looked at before tonight's show was, okay, this is all the medical stuff and that's why we've brought an expert in to set us straight on sperm washing and everything
else. And we
do
love Dr. Anne, don't we?
We love Dr. Anne.
Is she known as Dr. Anne in the circles?
We'll ask her. We'll ask her what she likes to be referred to. But what made us laugh most of today was the myths. The myths to help you conceive because, you know, going to a fertility clinic apparently isn't enough. There's a whole bunch of things you can do from home.
Oh, exactly.
And some of these I wouldn't recommend, though.
No wonder some young girls are confused about their own bodies without reading some of these things.
Dave, what was your favourite?
I'm actually scared to look at this. Actually, I'm going to go with the most yuckiest one.
Okay.
Myth number two. So this is a question for you, Michelle. You can say true or false. Okay.
Ooh.
Swallowing semen will make you more fertile.
Not that I've noticed.
This one I definitely want to ask Dr. Anne when she is finally given the microphone. You need to orgasm in order to conceive.
Of course.
I'm curious.
I'm curious about the breastfeeding and the birth control because my best friend just had a baby back in July and she's only just now had her period since, and she's breastfeeding. So I'm really curious to understand more about that as well, too.
And
well,
the menstrual cycle, fertility window, these are things I've got no idea about.
Michelle got a pack at university the other day, so maybe she can learn it over.
I can teach you.
Myth number four.
I'll show you how to use them.
Myth number four.
Okay, buzzer's ready.
Myth number four, lifting your legs in the air for 20 minutes after having sex will help you get pregnant.
No,
now,
not enough. It's got to be 40 minutes, I reckon.
Well, say you've been at a clinic to have one, and this is what we'll ask Dr. Anne, IVF or IUI, do you reckon it's really safe to have your legs in the air on the car ride home? I think that could actually be quite dangerous. There's an airbag there.
Yeah.
I think your partner should take you home in a wheelbarrow so your legs can be up. There's some fertile advice from me.
This one, because I think it's probably a link to the alcohol one. Chugging cough syrup will help you conceive.
No, I saw something on that.
Really?
You wouldn't stick with a generic brand, would you? Would go a bit high class, I reckon.
I mean, there were so many others I saw along that as well. And like, there was things like drinking lots of water and use Robitussin. Yeah. To increase the mucus.
Yeah. Eat yams.
Green tea, raspberry leaf, and vitamin B12.
It actually all makes sense to me.
Now, somebody did say...
Anyway, Dr. Anne is taking her lab coat off at the moment. She's getting a bit comfortable. We're ready for our grilling questions.
And we'd love, again, if you have any questions for Dr. Anne, if you have any myths...
Yes, text us in.
Not the ones.
0427 joy949 or email us on air at joy.org.au.
Call Moshin on the desk with some myths. I just surprise him. Don't tell him why you're calling. Just start ranting out the myths.
Call with your favourite myth.
Call away. You're listening to Family Matters on Joy 94.9.
Kids are all right. As for our presenters, Family Matters, Joy 94.9.
All your concerns are normal, but I have to tell you, before we sell any of our sperm to a client, we've known our donors for at least a year. I guarantee you're getting the cream of the crop here.
There you go. That was a clip from Ellen DeGeneres, sorry?
No.
Sorry. You are listening to Family Matters, by the way.
A few lesbians would remember the film If This Walls Could Talk, and there is a scene with Sharon Stone and Ellen DeGeneres where they are conceiving, and they, I think, when we learn the kind of what the difference between IUI and IVF is, I think they do the IUI option, and in this scene they're hunting for sperm and they've gone to a sperm clinic and they're wanting to make sure their sperm is the cream of the crop. But they then get some frozen sperm and go home.
I'm more intrigued how many times you've watched that film. Ellen DeGeneres and Sharon Stone.
It's a really old film, but that's pretty memorable.
That's a lesbian special.
That's a pretty memorable storyline, that one there.
Now, we've got a fertility doctor coming up, Dr. Anne Polines. Now, if you've got a question for her or just, you know, just random questions, basically, you can SMS us on 0427 joy949 or you can email us on air at joy.org.au.
And... Dr. Anne, welcome again to Family Matters. Dr. Anne Polines, who is our fertility doctor? You've been with us before. We were talking trans fertility last time. But tonight we are talking to our girls, be them single, be them in a relationship, and we want to give them a bit of an understanding what the difference between IUI and IVF is. But before we start, were any of those myths true?
No.
Are you sure?
The sex one? Does that help?
But it sounded interesting. They're worth trying just for the fun of
Not the wheelbarrow idea? I thought that was a good one.
I thought it was too. I mean, you know.
I think for a start, and I think IUI is probably the... I can't even pronounce it. Intrauterine insemination.
Give me a try. It's intrauterine insemination?
Yes.
There you go. Yeah. This could be an easy show, actually.
Well, there we go. We can just end up...
What is IUI?
Okay. So intrauterine insemination, because it is a bit tricky to say, we shorten to IUI, which is DI, donor in sem. And this is about timing of getting the sperm inside the uterus the day of ovulation. Still has to travel, gets about halfway really towards the egg. It still has to travel from the uterus up to the correct fallopian tube. And to meet the egg. Of course, as far as we know, sperm don't have any kind of radar system on them, so they just are bouncing around, and hopefully enough of them get up to the tube to meet the egg to cause fertilisation in the tube.
Is this because they don't ask for directions on the way?
Oh,
come on, we led to that.
There was more myths around it too, actually.
It's
going to
be a long night.
There was like your husband needs to drink caffeine because then those will be boy sperms and they'll get there faster and, yeah, all kinds of stuff like that.
So is this IUI, it's not this is not turkey-based or insemination. This is a little bit different.
Yeah, it wouldn't be considered safe to try and put a tube inside your own cervix into the uterus to put the sperm right inside there. So turkey baster is the term used for getting the sperm round the cervix or vagina, top of the vagina at home.
Yeah. Whereas this just goes a little bit further in the
that's
race.
Right. Yeah,
so,
okay.
So those of us playing at home, what is the difference between IUI and IVF?
IVF is a lot more involved because the principles of IVF are to get more chances by getting more eggs to develop at the same time. So to be able to do that requires pretty much daily injections for about 2 weeks to make the eggs all grow up at the same time.
Okay.
So with IUI, though, it's not that. But do you still need to have injections? Do you still need to go on? I assume there's still a process of going to see a fertility doctor, going into a clinic. And this is under the assumption that you already know where your sperm's coming from.
Yeah. So the principles of insemination are really to get the timing right.
Yeah.
So to be able to get the timing right, it is seen as more likely to work if you're able to do that. And to be able to do that, you probably need to take some form of medication. Mostly, I usually would use some tablets first at the start of the cycle, but it would require one final trigger injection, which triggers ovulation, so the timing is right. Mm-hmm. And yeah, as you said, you'd say, well, this is assuming you've found sperm. So you have the choice of bringing your own donor to the clinic, mm-hmm. Or choosing a clinic donor, which is an anonymous donor.
Well, one of the things we mentioned earlier is this thing of sperm washing. Now, I assume it's not, say, you know, we pull Dave into the clinic. It's not that I've made sure
don't
he's...
Don't bring me into this discussion.
You know, I haven't asked him to wash under his arms that day and iron his shirt. I assume this is something a bit more technical.
We don't put the donors in the washing machine.
No.
That's not
going to
work.
Okay, joke's all aside. So, come on, let's be serious for a moment.
So I suppose it's a way of saying the sperm's prepared, mm-hmm. and the preparing of it is to get all the seminal fluid off the actual sperm by a series of steps. One step is putting it all in a gel matrix, and the quickest ones swim up to the top and just skimming the quick ones off the top, mm-hmm. which are the good ones. And after having got all the other bits of cell and stuff out of it by spinning them very fast in a centrifuge machine. So that's the kind of the tumble, you know, so when tumble dryer aspect of it.
When did sperm washing become a thing?
Well, it's not safe to put raw, unprepared sperm inside the uterus. It will cause, besides the sperm being in the seminal fluid, there are other chemicals that would be harmful to a woman to do that. So you have to take all those chemicals out so that it's safe to do the procedure.
How you going, Matt? I know we just talked about it. There was a matrix in there, red pill, blue pill.
So you're talking about the other chemicals. So what do you mean by other chemicals?
So in the seminal fluid are agents that will cause the uterus to contract, prostaglandin. So it's not safe to have them introduced inside the uterus, and also it can cause quite a lot of pain. Okay. And from a practical point of view, it would mean it was less likely to work.
So how does that? Because I'm really fascinated and confused at the same time. So obviously normal intercourse.
What happens if sperm lands in the vagina? How does that, you know?
So obviously we all know the birds and bees and things like that, but obviously through normal old fashioned intercourse,
yeah.
Obviously things go in on their own and whatever. So you mean when the donor has it separately, like in a jar, and you take it from there to put it in, that's where it becomes not safe?
The bit that's not safe is, what happens in, say, if someone, you know, ejaculates into the vagina and the seminal fluid's in the vagina, then the sperm track in the vaginal mucus up to the cervix and, you know, push through the cervix. And that's kind of a way, the cervix is a good barrier for the seminal fluid of getting into the uterus. Okay. So when we do insemination, we push a tube through the cervix. So we're actually breaking through that natural resistance and protection barrier.
So those things that would normally be broken.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, this is the things we have to understand, like why this is, it's safer to go this way instead of doing this at home.
Yeah. Don't go to Bunnings and try tubey things.
But this is, I didn't understand that there's that barrier that all those fluids stop and then those guys go in. Yeah. Okay. Interesting.
Yeah. There's lots of roles that the cervix has that we don't appreciate, I think.
So there's also the one thing I've heard about IUI is that cost-wise compared to IVF, that this is a muchly cheaper option for people to go through.
And then also on top of that, is there any Medicare coverage for that?
Yeah.
So if someone's not infertile, which, I mean, we try and see if they could be deemed medically infertile, but honestly, if they're young and having regular cycles, they're probably not medically infertile. Then the cost of insemination, they don't get Medicare initially. So the cost of insemination would be pretty pricey, something like $2,000 to $3,000 to do a cycle.
Of IUI.
Of IUI.
Wow.
In comparison, IVF would be, you know, 3 to 4 times that. Yeah. This is all without Medicare.
It says here the cost includes pre-treatment appointments, tests, medicine, and the treatment itself. What's involved with the test part? What's the...
The donors are tested for viruses, genetic screening and chromosome analysis. It's to cover the cost of the donor's investigations.
So the woman who's going to get the treatment is paying for that cost of the donor getting those tests done?
It's only a proportion because if you have your own donor, you're paying for all the costs of those tests.
Yeah.
But then it's all your sperm.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah.
It's all mine.
Take the whole lot home with you.
I'm really curious. So a lot of these, let's say lesbian couples who've wanted to have children and were doing it the backyard way when they were getting a donor and then going home and doing it themselves. They could have really put themselves at extreme risk doing
There are two general risks. One is health risks from contracting viruses from the sperm, such as HIV, Hep B, Hep C. And obviously you try and protect yourselves a bit as much as you can by not choosing a donor, for instance, who may be using IV drugs or you think...
But just the techniques they were using to actually inseminate.
You're just using a syringe. So as long as you're not putting it through the cervix, it's fine. But you wouldn't be. Yeah. The second thing that you're exposed to is the possibility that the law says that a known donor, if they have contact with the child, could be an interested party in regarding custody in the future. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely worth contacting a lawyer to look at a legal agreement so that everyone kind of is on the same page about that.
Yeah. And if you need a good lawyer, Nicholas Family Law as well, a proud sponsor of the show.
Yes,
good.
And excellent. If you mention Joy, you can get 30 minutes.
30 minutes?
Free.
Wow.
Oh, wow, that's great.
I'm
actually
so excited.
That's really good.
It's actually really good.
Yeah, it's very good.
So thank you. What I did want to ask, though, is... One of the things, like a lesbian couple or a single lesbian woman wouldn't know if she's infertile. If she's only ever slept with women, she's not going to know, am I fertile, am I infertile? So if a woman came in to see you and said, I don't know, I'm in my mid-20s, would the answer you give her to start IVF or IUI be different if she was in her mid-20s or mid-30s or approaching her 40s? Will age play a part in this? And maybe we should... I think that age thing is actually a big question and maybe we should touch on that when we get back.
We are speaking with Dr. Anne Polines, who is a fertility specialist. You are listening to Family Matters on Joy 94.9.
There's more from the Family Matters team in just a moment on Joy 94.9.
Family Matters, Joy 94.9, Thursday, your favourite hour of radio. Now, you know, we've got fertility specialist Dr. Is it Dr. Anne or Dr. Anne P or Anne Polines? What, do you have a nickname?
Most people just call me Anne. That's fine. Oh, yeah.
No,
yeah.
I was hoping for something a little bit funkier than that. But
if some people feel uncomfortable with that, they can call me Dr. Anne. But
okay. Yeah. Dr. Anne it is. If you do have a question for Dr. Anne or Dr. Anne P, SMS us on 0427 Joy 949. Or it's 0427 569 949.
You're so cute.
If you can't figure out that Joy bit. Or email us on air at joy.org.au.
And one of the questions we were kind of finishing off there was deciding between IUI and IVF. So IUI seems to be almost the clinical home insemination version, but not. It will increase your rates of fertility. If someone needs to decide between that and IVF, and like we were saying, you're a single, just you're a lesbian woman who wants to come in, you don't know if you're fertile or not. I've come in my 20s or I've come in my 30s, I've come in my 40s. One, does age play a factor? And I think we've heard that on the grapevine that it does. And how do we even determine whether we're fertile or not? I don't want to go out and sleep with someone and go, oh, yeah, that didn't work. Clearly I'm not fertile. How do we actually deem which path we go on and will age play a factor?
So age is a big factor in fertility for anyone. And if a woman or a couple are, you know, in their 20s, it's quite usual that they would try insemination first before going straight to IVF because it's simpler, more natural and cheaper. Mm-hmm. If someone's 40 or over, then they usually will look at IVF from the beginning and have come in with that clear idea. But if they said, oh, look, you know, please can we give just insemination one go or two goes and see if it works because, you know, I'm probably not medically infertile otherwise besides age issues, then that would be fine. But yeah, to find out if someone's medically infertile, usually they're not you know, they've got regular cycles and they're not particularly painful and they haven't had any pelvic surgery, they're probably not. I mean, we can do invasive testing to try and work that out, but how far do you go and the cost of the tests and the pain and things, if you know in the end probably it's all going to be pretty...
Normal. So if you're young and you're having regular cycles, chances are you're fertile. You're pretty fertile.
Yeah.
Now, I remember when my now ex-wife, when she became pregnant with our second child, she was, I think, right around 40, 38, 39, pushing 40 sort of thing around that area. But I remember there was all these risks and things they had checked for when she became pregnant. Because there was like these higher risks of all these different abnormalities or whatever. In this day and age, especially here, I'm finding in Australia, we have a lot of women who are starting families later in life, closer to 40. Are we seeing those higher percentages of abnormalities? I can't even say the word tonight.
I don't know.
Anyway,
I can't even say.
Are we seeing those, or are we? Are we seeing a lot of healthy pregnancies at this age?
Mm. I think that we're kind of going slightly to a different topic, which is fine with me. Mm. But antenatal testing has come a long way, like looking for abnormalities in pregnancy, even in the last 20 years. So it's very common these days, the first thing people will do is a blood test, which is looking for abnormalities rather than going straight for invasive testing.
Yeah. And the reason I was asking this is because you are seeing more women who are probably going to IVF and stuff like, 'cause I've got friends who have done that. They've had a fair few children, then got married again closer to 40, and they went for IVF. And yeah, and so she was closer to 40. And so I was saying, you're talking about the higher risks, but do we see a large number of that coming at that time? So obviously we're more used to it now.
Yeah, I think we're just so used to it because so many women are having children older than they would have, you know, 30 years ago.
And what was the age when you were starting out that was the scary age?
Well, yeah, it was considered if a woman was over 35, that was considered, you know, a bit higher risk because of being
changed.
Over 35.
Yeah, yeah.
I also like the pronunciation, abnormality. you nailed it, Anne. Is there an age dependence on the donor, on the male donor?
The clinic donors are aged between 21 and 45. But it would be a good idea not to choose your own donor over 45, ideally, because there is an increased chance of, you know, the sperm having genetic defects or DNA defects the older the donor is after, but especially after 45.
If the patient's adamant about the donor, there's no real... They can go down that path?
Yeah, they can. I mean, obviously, we'd counsel them about, you know, and also the chance of success might be less. So, yeah, you'd counsel them about those options. But if they're really set on their own donor... then, of course, you know, we would consider that, yeah.
See, I've never heard that. I hear all about women of a certain age.
Yeah.
You've got to be this age and your chances decrease. I never hear that it's got an impact on men's sperm as well.
And then you see guys like, you know, the Rolling Stones popping out another child, you know.
Well, I think they get a lot of practice, though. So.
I think they do.
They do a lot of sperm washing, just being on
Mom,
tour.
Really, he's a good man. He raised many, many good children. I tell you, it was such a good time.
What I did want to ask about and what I did in some of the reading, so we're going to move on to IVF, but in some circumstances, and we were talking about South Australia earlier, in order for a woman to get some of the cost benefits from Medicare for IVF, because we know IVF is a lot more expensive than IUI, they almost need to be deemed medically infertile. Hmm. So is that something people would do? They'll try IUI and go, didn't work, and then move to IVF to get, or will your age alone set you off as medically infertile before you can do IVF?
It would if you're, you know, in your 40s, but you'd hopefully wouldn't be waiting till then to just prove that point, because success is less if you're in your 40s compared to your 30s or 20s. I mean, we'll do whatever someone wants within, you know, the realms of the law, of course. So some couples come in and want to do reciprocal IVF from the beginning and they might be in their 20s, which means a lesbian couple where one of the woman does stimulation to get the eggs, the other woman, after the embryo is created, carries the pregnancy. So if that's what they want to do from the beginning and they're not medically infertile, we'll do it, even though we know that it's a very expensive way of doing it.
Yeah.
But if someone says, oh, look, I'm not sure, I'll try IUI first because, you know, it might work, you know, as well. And if it didn't work, and we'll give it a few goes, maybe three or something like that, and then if it hasn't worked and we want to look at IVF, then we will at that point.
So when you say three goes, you're talking about...
Sorry, three cycles.
Is that three cycles of the $2,000 to $3,000?
It would be the first two cycles of the $2,000 to $3,000.
So that's $6,000 already.
Mm. It's extremely expensive. Yeah. I mean, you understand why people try at home, even though there's risks. Mm.
There is absolutely risks. Mm. What I wanted to ask, though, is IVF. So we've kind of just touched on IUI, which, yes, there is a process, but it doesn't seem to be as kind of involved as IVF.
Yeah.
Is IVF far more... Like, what are we really talking about when we're looking at the differences between IUI and IVF for a couple?
IUI is a lot simpler and the process is less invasive mm-hmm. on your body. Like in IVF, doing self-injections every day for 2 weeks is quite a long time and, you know, it takes a lot of people a bit of a hurdle to get to the point of doing injections.
And what are those injections actually
for? I was just about to ask, yeah. I'm very naive with that.
Yeah.
So the principles are to get more than one egg and put the, and then once the eggs are out of the body, put the sperm with the egg to try and encourage fertilisation. So to get more than one egg requires high dose of hormones to stimulate, known as follicle stimulating hormone, FSH, to stimulate more eggs to grow at the same time. Whereas on a natural cycle, mm-hmm. those eggs are there, but usually suppression of, you know, a whole bunch coming forward mm-hmm. is quite you know, checked so that only one egg will grow at a time. Because it's really considered safe for women to only carry one baby at a time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So with IVF, so this is a matter of taking the egg and then joining it with the sperm and then putting it back.
Yeah, eggs. Yeah, because not every single egg's 100% tip-top. So ideally you have a group of eggs, like 10.
So you'd inject a few eggs at the same time.
Keep injecting yourself and then taking the eggs that have grown out of your body and then putting them with sperm in the laboratory and to create embryos, but just putting one embryo back at a time and freezing others for the future.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Mm.
Well, how long does that take? So the IUI cycle sounds like, because you're just putting something in that's been washed and it's all ready to go. Bing. Good luck. Find out. This other process, IVF, you're injecting, you're then sucking some eggs out, doing some stuff in the back room.
Is that the noise it actually makes?
That's the fallopian tube and making the noise.
When I use a suction, I actually have the sound turned down.
Love it. I like the noise. So then you're obviously putting stuff out. Does an IVF cycle obviously last longer? Like, is there more
It's pretty
around?
Much still a calendar month.
Okay.
But it's the intensity of what you're doing to yourself. Self-injecting, an actual operation to take the eggs out through a vaginal needle while you're under anaesthetic. This is, you know,
that's full on.
Yeah,
that's
full on. Yeah.
And if you're scared of needles, can you take something else instead? Can you take
a pill? They haven't invented a non-needle-like preparation. They have looked at this for, like, across medicine, immunizations and other things, rather than using a needle to put medication inside your body. Is there a way of just holding it up to your skin and it kind of just shushes under the skin? They haven't got to that for IVF drugs. Yeah.
Now, with the so many acronyms tonight, IUI and IVF, what are the success rates?
Depends on female age.
Oh,
so
wow.
The best would be someone in their 20s or early 30s, and the chance of IVF success is something like 40 to 50% from a cycle. It's not more than 50%.
Yep.
Yeah, now, 40 to 45.
The emotional toll, you would see it daily with your patients. Obviously, IVF and IUI don't always work, so people have to go back and have another crack.
Yeah.
Now, with the counselling of those patients that are not succeeding in that area, what sort of counselling do they get?
Mm. So I'm not a trained psychologist, so I have very low threshold to saying to patients if they say, look, we're really struggling with this.
Yep.
I'll say, look, you know, they will have already seen a psychologist prior to treatment. Everyone has to. It's the law in Victoria. So I'd encourage them to see the same one if they got along with them.
Okay. Yeah. And that's to prepare them for the journey of what they're about
to. Yeah, it's to make sure they know what they're up for, really. For donor cycles, they have to do a minimum of 2 sessions, 2 weeks apart to be aware of the legislation around donor-conceived people and access to identifying information about their donor when they're an adult. Yeah, that's what the law says will happen.
But, yeah, that rollercoaster of patients.
That's long.
Being ups and downs and the failures and the succeed. So does that take a toll on your job daily?
I guess, sometimes, things do. I mean, especially if you know your patients really well and it's not working. Yeah, of course it must take some psychological impact as the treating clinician, of course, But it's more that we feel bad for them, you know, if we can't help them. We feel, you know, that we want to be able to help them and hope in the end that we can.
And at this time, this woman is being pumped with injections daily of hormones.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
It messes with your mind.
I think it would mess with your mind.
Mm. Now, speaking about some of the myths, we do have a text message in here. Should I keep a pillow under my hips for a time, I think 15 minutes after sex, to encourage the sperm? I've tried it just for the heck of it. Can you have any advice? Does it work? Does the
15 minutes? I'm very time conscious. That seems too long, really. To be I mean, unless you kind of doing a bit of yoga or meditation at that time, that you can use the 15 minutes. I think that my own personal feeling is probably don't jump up straight away, but you know, maybe no more than 5 minutes though.
You
but
bump
no,
your
the
head,
pillow,
like,
no need for the
bottle.
Pillow.
I'm
no
liking the wheelbarrow method.
And I like the wheelbarrow method too. Don't steal it off me, Anne. I don't want you giving that advice to your
like
patients
this.
Tomorrow.
So many things we can get from Bunnings. No, we're not going
to. In case you are not following at home correctly, we are talking to a fertility specialist in Dr. Anne Polinis. I've got another question here from Sam. What happens if the IUI, so many letters, IUI/IVF doesn't work?
Well, if things don't work the first time, I mean, we reassess what happened. In IVF, we learn a lot more probably than IUI because we have more information. We have, you know, look what happened, how many embryos we created, what happened when they started to grow, did they grow okay? Yeah, so we know a lot more. So we have a discussion about what actually happened and whether it's worth trying again.
So many acronyms tonight.
So many.
Now, it is Family Matters, your favourite hour, and we'll be speaking with Dr. Anne Polinis a little bit more. You're listening to Joy, Family Matters. And that's our baby reference for our fertility special. You are listening to Family Matters on Joy 94.9. SMS 0427 Joy 949 or email us on air at joy.org.au if you've got any fascinating questions for our fertility specialist, Dr. Anne Polinis. Now, there's a bit happening in state politics. Sorry to... just to bring down the, you know, the joy levels.
Anne told us a fascinating story outside, though, because of some state politics and some different rules interstate, why we might have currently some bouncing tourism numbers in Victoria. Anne, can you fill us in what's happening in South Australia?
Well, there's good news from hopefully very soon around state politics in South Australia of changing the law regarding access treatment so that all women in South Australia hopefully we'll be able to seek fertility treatments, not just people who are medically infertile. Because currently we do see some travellers from South Australia, Adelaide area coming over to do treatment in Victoria because in Victoria they're allowed to.
Now, Jay Weatherill, the state premier, doing great work. But I reckon the women will be thinking, just keep the laws as they are because I don't mind getting out of South Australia once every so often and coming to Melbourne.
They mightn't think
Isn't that good news?
Is that like an Airbnb for an IVF IUI? Like you could sell that.
Don't try and bring another acronym to tonight.
Yeah, I know
but IUI.
IUD
IVF,
is not what we do.
Airbnb.
Yeah. Lots of that sort
J-O-Y,
of
J-O-Y.
J-O-B.
949.
You might need a J-O-B if you're going to pay for some of these.
Yeah, or three.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Now, Dr. Anne, before we let you go, because I can't believe we're almost at the end of the night, but what's your best advice for a single woman or a couple wanting to come and see you? They've decided, you know what, we're going to go down the anonymous donor route. We're going to go that way.
Yep.
We're going to come into a clinic. How do they actually come in and go, how do you decide between these? It was hard enough for us to look this up on the internet without giggling a little bit, sperm washing and myths and stuff.
I did not laugh one little bit. I was very serious
very
with all
serious.
My Google researching.
Whole time.
Even the wheelbarrow tactic.
Where would a woman come in and start this journey?
Look, some people do already, before they come and see me, obviously the answer is come and see me. but, you know, some people have really looked into it quite a lot, done a lot of reading, have a lot of friends who've done a similar thing in doing in intrauterine insemination first. So they come in with thinking that's going to be right for them. Mm-hmm. And so that's the answer. But if, you know, someone comes in and says, look, we're considering doing this, but we're also considering moving straight to IVF, then, there's not – one's not right and one's not wrong. It is a personal preference. And I think the younger you are in principle, we should, as clinicians, be steering people towards the simpler process. Mm. If someone really wants to move straight to IVF, of course they can.
And say they've come into a clinic and they want an anonymous donor, what's the kind of turnaround time for them to, one, find a donor and then maybe start – kicking it off?
So not very long. It's about a month. And that's because of Victorian legislation that says all patients need to do a police check and another form called a child protection check before they start, and do two donor counselling sessions 2 weeks apart. So that takes about a month altogether.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mentioned something about the checks. So anyone to start, they got to do what kind of check?
They need to do a form called a child protection check, which is to find out if there could be previously that there's been some issues with access to a child, like a child's been removed from their care.
Okay.
And also a police check for fertility. So even if they've got a work police check already, they will need to do another one. That is the law.
But this is any individual.
We don't
individual
have to agree
coming
with the laws. Yeah. We just have to abide by them. Yeah, this is everybody.
This
everyone
is
who
everybody.
Wants to do treatment in Victoria, even if they live in another state, this is Victorian law.
Wow.
So in the law legal area, what are Victoria? What can Victoria be doing better in?
Getting
sort
of rid
of area.
Those laws.
I just find that interesting. You have had this police check. That's
And there's a cost to getting a police. I'd assume there's costs.
It's like 20
all these kind of things.
I don't know how much it is. I thought it was more like $80 really? Oh, for a police check.
And would you again get a GP referral before coming in to see yourself as a fertility specialist to get started on this journey?
I think it's nice to have, you know, the support of your GP. They may well have already done some baseline investigations for you know, getting ready for pregnancy. But if they haven't, we do that, and we also would organise an ultrasound and hormone checks and studies before
all that sort of
starting.
Stuff. Mm. And I think you were mentioning before we were on air, we were talking about an anonymous. So say we're going the anonymous donor route because that's going to be a little bit quicker, and then anonymous donor doesn't need to go through counselling because they've probably done all that stuff. Mm. How do you pick it? How do you pick one?
The information you get is non-identifying features like height, weight, hair colour, eye colour, you know, hair curly and straight.
That's getting interesting.
And then so some people would choose on appearance. Others, you also get personality profiles, so understanding of what makes them tick, you know, do they like to...
So they're like, not doing a Myers-Briggs test in the background.
It's almost like Tinder for your...
There's an app idea right there.
For IVF, you know?
Now, I've got some big issues in traffic. People not saying thank you when you let somebody in. Is that information on the... because I would not... You would not like a donor that doesn't, you know, let people in traffic and doesn't say thank you. Is that kind of information on the... How in-depth is this information?
I don't think the traffic question has come up, but I'll bring that up with the clinic. They might like to add
Please
it.
Do. We're going to try and eradicate people who don't
But they
thank
are
you
altruistic and... donors, so they are, you know, have to be people who are good-natured, and I'm sure they'll be at the thank you kind of people.
In the bottom. Oh, like they're in QRs with, like, habitual nose picker, you know, that kind of stuff.
And one of the things, because you were talking about the genetic testing, so, you know, if donor, you know, who does wave at traffic that Dave likes doesn't suit your maybe... genetic DNA, maybe there's something. Is that picked up at that stage? So say you're a carrier and someone's a carrier. I failed your biography. Oh, there you go. Can't even
biography.
Say geography. Biography. Like, I was so bad at science.
Your geography.
But
geography
I know sometimes if two things are carriers or one's a, I don't know, receptacle or something. I don't know.
Yeah, the testing, the testing for carrier status, if a... you know, some people in the population are carriers for certain conditions, for instance, cystic fibrosis. Then if the donors are screened for this prior to being on the program.
Yeah.
So they're aware of the carriage status and won't be proceeding on the program.
And say you've got a family history of something you know that is passed on genetically.
Yeah.
Can you ask that your anonymous donor also be tested before you pick
them? Yes, yes.
Ooh.
You
can.
Yeah.
That's a good benefit.
You know, it will obviously take time and to get that testing
stretch
done.
Stretch that month.
Yeah. And
you know, every time we have Dr. Rand Polinis on the show, we always end with, we need another hour.
We do need another hour.
We do.
Well, we just have
and
to
we
have
come on again.
Again soon.
We come on again?
Of course.
Oh.
I think Dave wants to know more about this donor stuff.
There's so much to go. I want a whole show dedicated on these myths. On these 10 myths.
So none of the myths.
Lifting your legs in the air for 20 minutes after having sex will help you get pregnant.
Breastfeeding and birth control? Actually, should women be off birth control? Because some women take it for other reasons other than how long can a woman be off birth control, actually, before she comes and sees you?
If it's tablets, like the pill, then we would see them while they're still on their pill.
Yeah.
And if they're using it because they have, you know, horrendous periods,
or,
they probably want to stay on it until the actual treatment cycle.
Okay. Mm. Mm. Cool.
Yeah.
Don't stop anything.
Don't stop anything.
No. Before.
Speak to Dr. Anne first.
Yes. Well, Anne, we would just thank you again for coming in. Always a world of knowledge in this area.
We love it.
And there's always more questions when we leave. So if you do have further questions for Dr. Anne after the show, what can they do, Dave?
They can tune into our podcast, which I'm sure there'll be some contact details there. But you can SMS. Sorry, what's our email? Familymatters@joy.org.au.
Yeah. Hey, look, if you just go Joy Family Matters, you're going to find us everywhere.
Yeah, but we're also
Twits. We are podcasting, we are twitting.
Twits, Family Matters 94, Facebook is /Family Matters on Joy.
Instagram, yeah. You name it, we are there.
Anyway, thank you very much, Anne.
Pleasure.
Been a
thank
pleasure.
You.
You're listening to Family Matters on Joy 94.9.
The kids are all right. As for our presenters, Family Matters, Joy 94.9.
Welcome back. You are listening to Family Matters, where you were listening to Family Matters. And to continue with the rest of our amazing Thursday family night, it's flowing into the woods.
Wolf! Now, I know what they're actually talking about. They're going overseas. They're talking to Mr. Austria, live from Vienna.
Is that a spoiler? Were you allowed to mention
that? Yeah. I tell you what, I saw a photo of him.
Well,
anyway, did you hear what's happening March 9th?
I barely listened to anybody, really.
I know.
Barely.
Oh, no,
she's here all week, folks. Try the veal.
Yeah.
But we're having a joint show with them. A combined show.
I'm actually a little bit afraid of what the Bears will do to me.
Oh.
I'm going to tell you, it's a secret just amongst us, but I'm a little bit scared.
Matt, work experience boy, we might
Matt,
have
don't
to
turn up that week.
You've got a work experience, kid.
Hey, how cute is he?
I heard you as my work experience. But, kid. I love it.
When I heard the Woods were talking to a man from Vienna, like famous Austrians.
Is that where
Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Ooh. Sound of Music.
Sausages.
Austria? Or
I've got a feeling.
Pretzels.
I don't know who's from Austria.
No.
He's somewhere. But I'm looking forward to the double episode we're going to have with the Bears. Yes. I have a feeling it will change in audience ratings, like as in parental guidelines ratings.
I get to put my mama bear hat on. It's great. I love it.
I think it's awesome. Oh, my God. I've learned so much tonight.
So have I.
Sperm washing.
It's just brought me, make my mind think so much more after this. So,
Family Matters, another episode is done and dusted.
Another dusted. So, you can't get us on our podcast. We'll see you next week. Ciao.
Good night.
You've been listening to Joy 94.9's Family Matters podcast, your light-hearted look at parenthood and rainbow families, sponsored by Berry Street. Did you know that Berry Street seeks members of our LGBTI communities to become foster carers? Not only do they have a proud tradition of training and embracing LGBTIQ carers, they officially support marriage equality. Learn more now at berrystreet.org.au, a proud Joy sponsor for over 5 years.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.